Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, January 3rd, 2016, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in America. My name is Grantham Taylor Hughes for my show, The Grantham Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabrielle Foster. Hi, Gabrielle. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. How about yourself, Grant?
I'm just fine.
That's good.
Well, it's a new year, correct?
It is a new year.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Thank you for emphasizing that. Appreciate that. I was wondering, we had talked about this a while back, about 2015 and 2000 and versus 2015. We have extra word in there, 2000, right? Or extra syllable. Instead of saying 20, do you think that'll change much? Because I still hear people say 2016 or 2015. Do you think that'll change in the future? What's your opinion?
I think people are saying 2015, 2016.
Oh, you hear them do that? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, people never said 1972 or 1998. They always said 1972. And 19-ought, I remember people saying, and 1920. So I think people are saying, I think in the beginning they might have said 2000, 2001, 2002, and so forth.
Well, however,
when the digit got to be double there, 2010, I think they started probably saying 2010.
Right, but I think even with the festivities on the new year this year, they were saying 2016. They weren't saying 20. It's now 2016. They were saying emphasizing, I suppose.
Really? Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, and then I keep thinking, well, if you go back to the whole millennium, it'd be really hard to figure out what they were saying since it would be 1,000 years ago. Like 1,001 and 1,010. It's now 1,010 instead of 1010, right?
I wonder why
I brought that up today. Okay, go ahead.
Well, it's interesting, though, but because in French they would use 1,000 because they would say, Dumil says, 2016, mill is 1,000. So they say Dumil says. So they always use the mill for the 1,000 when they say the date in French.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that, because I know how important the French are on this call, which is being facetious. I know. I don't want to get any bad emails in French from the French.
Okay. Well, whatever.
All right. Well, now we'll become pertinent, I suppose, since I've been impertinent. But that was just a discussion for the new year, a new year discussion, correct?
Mm-hmm. And have you made New Year's resolutions?
Yes, I promised I'd be on the subject matter in my description.
Oh, that's one that's probably going to be broken quickly. What else? What other resolutions did you make?
Well, I've tried to, I know, it's just a difficult and trying situation for me, so to speak, in terms of do people ever stay on the subject? You know, circle back to this discussion. For instance, if I say the 1930 Geneva Convention bankruptcy, and in 5 minutes from now I repeat that, they say, oh, we can stay on the subject, see, because most of the time people aren't paying attention. There you go, right, having said that, correct?
What is the main topic tonight? Do you have a topic in mind?
Yes, the 1930 Geneva Convention. Look at that. You got back on the subject. Amazing.
Just checking.
Or at least the what came out of it as a result of the bankruptcy, which is what we are in the result of today. That's why I was saying on my UK call on Sunday mornings that's my target, beginning reference point. So if you can reference that, then we have the results of it in our present society with the money issues. And the money issues being we have debt currency, that very few people really understand or really care about. Because, as I've said many times on this show, as long as you can buy things with it, nobody really cares about whether it's debt or credit. But I think they should. Do you think that's a good idea? What's your opinion about that? I mean, I have a lot of opinions, but what's your view of that?
Well, about whether they should care about it? Well, I mean, it doesn't seem to make any difference when people are able to purchase what they want. However, something could happen to alter that. So it probably would be best to write the situation.
Well, what could happen that could alter that?
I was afraid you were going to ask me that question.
Well, you're
I
the
have
one that
no
said
idea.
It.
I have no idea, but
okay, there
I mean, couldn't there be some kind of circumstance that would alter it, that would make it, that would mean that we're not able to purchase anything because we're in debit, a debt society?
In my opinion, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm just saying, because we are in a debt society, is there a circumstance that could evolve that would mean that we wouldn't be able to purchase anything?
Well, that's a good question, unless it was annihilated, I suppose. But that would be the worst-case scenario and probably the only way that it would end, because my opinion is it will be the status quo. Even though people talk about all this stuff, like the next 2 weeks are doing some readjustment of the currency, readjustment. What's that term they use? I forgot.
Revalue?
Reset. Which is just nonsense. That will not happen. That's just cocktail party rhetoric. And it just continues on plodding along in the debt system, which is Keynesian economics from the mid-40s. In other words, we can work from a deficit spending is what they work from. And nobody's responsible for the debt. Because it doesn't matter because you have purchasing power. You have the ability to buy things, and that will continue on. And you see, so I think I look at things all the time, and I review things and read things and analyze things, and all of it's pretty much nonsense, you see, because it doesn't make any sense. I mean, I have a minor in economics, and I'm considered an eminent economist from my views. And from an economic view, it doesn't make any sense what they talk about. You can read articles and get into it in depth, and I know the jargon and the philosophy and the ideas of it. And when I get into it, it pretty much turns into mud at some point because there's too many contradictions and making no sense, and they're just filling in white space in the books, the magazines that they sell, the economists, and which are pretty much in waning process. In terms of looking at the newspapers, they're struggling like all get out because of the internet. See, and interestingly enough, having said that, atavistically they have Technica, bringing back the turntables, long playing records. I mean, that's amazing, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting, but I don't know, I don't know if they're going to replace CDs. I don't know why they're bringing them back.
Well, my opinion is CDs are evanescent. They are easily scratched, easily ruined. Maybe that's my opinion,
What are you going to do in your car? What would you do in your car? You can't have a turntable in your car.
No, I don't think there's a matter of replacing one or the other. I think that just the idea of anachronisms, just like they have the Amish that still exist today, but they sort of bleed over into society to make it workable. So you can bring back anything if you spend the money on it and you advertise it. You see, because that's why nostalgia is a big seller sometimes. Like some of these cities that go in and refurbish different areas because of nostalgia. Nostalgia can be marketed. And that's why they do that, because they find a market, a niche, they pump a lot of money into advertising, and they get people to buy it. They buy into it. And mainly, I think nostalgia, and I'm sure you agree that nostalgia is a big seller, just like women's designs. They go back to looks that they've had in the past many years ago, and it's like a cycle of things. And then a compendium in a marketplace with just about everything. You go into the stores now, you don't have ice cream. You don't have chocolate, strawberry, vanilla. You have who knows what. Chocolate swirl, right, in the movie Fatso.
Well,
I want some chocolate swirl ice cream.
I think a lot of different flavors have been around for a long time. You can thank Howard Johnson's for that.
But I'm just saying that thank you very much for just, you know, completely making my premise ridiculous. Well, that's right. I have no problem with that. Maybe it is, and maybe it isn't. I'm just trying to say simplicity has gone out the window in terms of versatility. You know, variety is the spice of life. Bertrand Russell said that a century ago. So you see, so that's not something that's necessarily brand new, but I still think the atavistic, the resurrection of things, happens if you can afford it. Or like new technology, just like a lot of people want me to do some advanced technology because I'm probably the only one that really knows how to do it, which is sad to say. Just like I've been resurrecting some of my stuff that was not in closure when I was in college because they didn't know a lot of things in physics and still haven't changed it today. And I'm so shocked that reinvestigating and looking at it closely again, I see that they're still being ridiculous about certain concepts, which I don't want to go into that because it's lengthy and would take me longer than the show. And bore people stiff, right? In terms of a hydrogen atom, right? Would that be boring completely? And then it's totally off the track of the bankruptcy. But in a way, it's not because of the fact that there's no closure on that either. But I'm just trying, in terms of that category of things that aren't complete, or can they be completed? Are we going to stay in a bankruptcy forever? In my opinion, it's pretty much so, unless we get to a approximate mathematics that I've said many times on the show. And you understand what I'm saying, because if they have to get down to the penny accountability for everything, then we're never going to be able to be in a banking equilibrium, as they call it, in a balanced budget type thing, or a state of surplus. Because the surpluses they've had in the past were just myths. They really didn't exist. They were just political rhetoric and things. During the Clinton administration, supposedly there was a surplus, but it wasn't really that way with the offshoot accounting and banking, things of that nature. And then the front-end debt service that goes on because of the problem with the currency and a debt currency that we use. So there wasn't a discussion about that. It was like a false credit issue. It wasn't really real. And because we were still using debt currency. See, so the balancing of accounts is impossible theoretically because we've got debt currency. If we're wielding debt, where's the credit? You see? I mean, that's the question. Where is the credit? I mean, I know where the credit is, but most people don't know where the credit is. But the credit is vaulted at high-level banking. They put it in the vault, and it's behind closed doors, if you will. So the really the only credit-worthy or solvent social reference or solvent society is behind a vault, right? Because it's not public, it's a private solvency. See, because you can't have a bankruptcy that's workable if there's not a solvency somewhere. How could you be in total debt on a constant basis if there wasn't something behind it that was solvent? See, it doesn't make any sense because it would be destroyed today. If you're in the red, how can you function if you have no money? Do you understand? See, in other words, they allow the debt service, they allow the money that we call debt to be used for purchasing power, but ultimately you shouldn't be able to do that, see, because nobody's calling it in. In other words, the merchant's taking the money for the bake, the bread, but he's not saying, hey, you're giving me an IOU, where's the credit? He's not doing that. Nobody's calling in the credit. See, the whole society is dealing in debt and accepting it. But it really is a, well, it's the best word, moronic state, if to that, or unaware state, or nobody cares state, because it works. See, it's like, I can't even think of an analogy that something that isn't supposed to work but does. I mean, I can't think of anything, well, or just like a low technology. It's like an automobile. It's damaging to the environment. Everybody knows that in terms of its pollution and what have you, but we still use it. There's an analogy right there. It's awful technology that essentially destroys the environment, but we still do it. We still, because it's a compelled benefit. That's a good one. Because we don't have any alternative, so we're compelled to use it. I mean, even though we shouldn't, we do, right? You understand what I mean by that? Compelled benefit.
Right. No, I do understand.
It's like a Uniform Commerce Code 1-207 that was amended to 1-208. The old language used to be, we're not liable for the limited liability of a compelled benefit. And all that mouthful essentially is we're not liable for the credit if we call in. I mean, we're not liable for the debt if we call in the credit. So if we call people on that, in other words, the banks are in breach of contract, if we call in the breach of contract, then the challenge is being serving notice on the banks. See, but no one's doing that. I mean, I could do it, but no one does it. It'd be a lawsuit that would take 10 years to take the bank. It might be worthwhile to do that so that people could become more aware of it. But it wouldn't help, because it would be just a circular argument of how can we maintain things without always going into bankruptcy cycles, because they have 70-year bankruptcy cycles that they go in, because you can't it gets so bad in terms of the debt issues that they finally just declare bankruptcy because it's too noticeable. But I don't care about those, because the one that we really have a result of now, that we're dealing with now, is the one from the Geneva Convention bankruptcy. That hasn't been resolved and won't be, in my opinion, because of the problem with, we don't have approximate mathematics in banking. It's exact mathematics. It really doesn't exist. It's a relative issue. The bankers don't even understand it. Maybe I'm the only one that understands. I talk about it, but people really don't get it, because they think that you could add 1 + 1 in a group of 100 and get the answer correct every time, but you can't. See, it's relative. And even having said that, people say, well, that's ridiculous. If 100 people add 1 + 1, they're going to get 2. And I say, I beg to differ. Do it empirically. Get 100 people in the room and ask them to add 1 + 1 = 2, and you're going to get some different answers. God only knows why, but you will. It's ridiculous. It really is. It's an absurdity is beyond belief. Because it's illogical, but it's built into the antitheticalness of language. Because it's illogical too. Because what we talk about is perfect ambiguity. I have a book by Richard Lederer, who wrote a book. He was a linguist, and he wrote a book called The Miracle of Language. And I went through that, and there were mistakes, and I was annotating it and correcting it and things. I mean, so here was supposed to be a perfect treatise, and it wasn't, see? And he would probably safely admit it wasn't impossible to do. See, so if you get it wrong one way, and you're getting it right several times, there's still going to be a percentage statistically of not getting it right. And that's the nature of statistics. Just like statistical classes, they will safely admit, and teachers and what have you, if you have a 98% experiment that's going to go one way or the other 2% don't even count. They would consider at 98% 100%. So the 2% don't matter, because, again, it's a relativity issue. So do you understand what I'm talking about with all this, or is it too complex? I suppose it probably is. Election to do that, I suppose. But you know what I'm trying to say? In other words, that you cannot, in time and space, you can't have perfection. This is not possible. And I think you agree with that, right?
Yeah, I do agree with that. Because two people will agree on what action is, so that's why you can't have perfection.
I couldn't hear it. You were cutting out.
No, two people will agree on what perfection is, so that's why you can't have perfection.
Well, I mean, that's a simple way of putting it, but my opinion is that you're dealing with the theories of uncertainty in physics. I mean, they even have theories written by Dr. Bayes of the past for Bayesian theories in uncertainty, and many physicists have done that we're living in an uncertain world. But most people don't want to agree to that, because now you're going to teach the students we have an uncertain world out there. It's going to scare people. It's going to frighten people that you're not really on on the surface, it's really spinning around like they talked about in many classwork and movies. They're talking about how the atoms and whatnot are spinning, and there's a lot of space between it. You're getting people confused. See, that's why they create these standards, or they call it stable datum and what have you, of a surface you're standing on, and you can't say it's just made up of atoms and you're going to fall through. What's that going to do? You're going to have societies completely running amok. And maybe they are. That's interesting in itself. You understand what I mean? In terms of, you have to have stable datum in terms of a standard, stability standards. Maybe it's rhetoric. I don't know. I think it is rhetoric in terms of reality. You see what I mean?
I understand what you're saying. In terms of math and sciences and so forth, yeah, I understand that.
Right. Is it empirical? Is it a fact? Or is it just fiction or theory? See, there really aren't any laws. They're theories. Because laws are evanescent. Things change all the time. They're not always the same. And every individual has their own opinion, and it's very unique. And it may be completely different from their neighbor. See, in other words, that's why you call it common law. We have to get to common ground, but it's not necessary. It has to be agreed upon. Otherwise, we have destruction. That's what I'm trying to get at. We have to get in common ground. We have to find a common ground to work from. And if we don't do that, then it's a warring faction. It's a difficult and destruction. And I was saying this morning that's why archaeology digs down into the dirt and finds cultures layered upon each other, because it goes ad infinitum. And then they say, wasn't the earth a certain size? I say, well, no, if you talk about that particular paradigm, but I'm not into that, see? So you've got, essentially, nature doesn't play favorites at some point because it destroys the societies. It's happened many times before, albeit you have to be not a creationist to believe in that. You have to be an evolutionist, which I am. I think it's ridiculous to say it was only about 6,000 years old and then condemning the dinosaurs. I mean, that to me, that's absolutely ridiculous. And I don't care what the right-wing beliefs are about that. It's absurd. And when we know it is, but we deal with it because it's all encased in certain scriptures and writings and stuff. And I'm just not interested in that. I mean, I think we have to, as the kids used to say, or I used to say, you got to get real. I finally told a joke, but we're pretty far into it. We're supposed to do that in the first 20 seconds.
Oh, well.
Yeah, make people laugh. Oh, well. The joke came late, right? Exactly. The joke's coming late. Well, okay. In terms of the topics of our health, solvency and AFI and chattel, I've been bouncing around talking about solvency in terms of money, and that's important. It's an important issue to people in reference to what they can and can't do on a daily basis. They want to have money enough to do their daily business, and that's why we've often talked to the idea of creating wealth. In terms of, I mentioned in the past that the book, The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace Wattles, and in chapter 14, The Waxing of Increase, or the main thought should be of increase. And that's very, very important because people are crying the blues all over the world in terms of finance, but they have to know that they can do it themselves. If they maintain a focus and a belief, and mainly it's about belief. If you don't believe it, if you're caving in to the system of competition the way it is, which is a huge mistake, because people can be very creative in themselves in terms of their belief factors. So if we learn to believe that we can do it, then it will happen. All right, I realize that people want it now, so they create a time element, what have you. Okay, when you do that, that could be a setback, in my opinion, because it's a sensitive issue about the now and the timing and the how. Now and how. How now, brown cow, right? All right, another joke there. So the now and the how are issues, or the timing and the how are issues that are difficult to extricate from our minds, you have to be sort of at an inborn state to let all that go. Because if you got financiers or debt collectors at the door, then that becomes an issue. So people have that tendency to think of the future and they can't stay in the present. Like Eckhart Tolle tries to get his people to be in the perpetual now and stuff. I don't know if he's patented the word or what yet. But we can't use it. If, and then to use it, we'll be sued, right? Anyway. Hey, three jokes. It's pretty good. I'll keep track.
Yeah,
I'll get the little dance.
Pretty good. You're doing better.
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm doing better since I'm getting down towards the end of the show. At the same time, I think that becomes the issue, that people have poor belief systems in terms of what they can and can't do. And there's an affirmation that Wallace uses in the book. It's, I can succeed, all that is possible to anyone is possible to me. I am successful, I do succeed, for I'm full of the power of success. So if you play that back, if you haven't got the book, then you'll have the affirmation that you're supposed to do for 30 days to convince your subconscious that you can really do it and do what anybody has in terms of wealth. It's pretty easy, but I don't think people believe it. I think that's the biggest problem. What's your opinion of that whole thing?
As far as that affirmation or affirmations in general?
You have
to believe it when you say it. If you're just saying it rote, I don't know if it has any effect. So I think you have to have some feeling or emotion involved with it to make it happen.
Right. And what about the timing and the how issues? That the motivators generally agree that shouldn't be focused upon. Because when you do it, I think it draws down on the situation.
I think that's pretty tricky. I haven't had much success with putting timing on things, so it doesn't seem to make any difference. Maybe that's putting too much restriction on the energy to make it happen. I'm not sure. But I just haven't had good luck with it.
Right. And then, you know, when Wattles wrote the book in 1910, in the past 105 years, it looks like the society is still caught in heavily into competition, right? So they don't really believe that they can have tremendous wealth that he was talking about 105 years ago. So is it something that it's an illusion in front of me, that I'm getting it all wrong, everybody's waiting for me to wake up to the fact that everyone's wealthy, but I didn't know it? That's interesting, huh? Is that true? You know, then you laugh.
You're asking me that question? I don't know how I can answer that question for you.
Well, I don't know either, because it's 105 years, and it doesn't seem like people seem to be practicing it. If they are, they're not articulating it, that's for sure. I mean, maybe that's a hard question. It's not the fact that I don't believe it. It's just, I'm just saying that it appears to be, if you look at these things closely, because in the book he's saying, well, you just have to feel the faith and believe it. You know, feel the faith, as he said, you have to feel it and project it and outflow it on a constant basis. And it's supposed to come back to you. It's not that I don't believe that, but I mean, you know, it's hard to think of the timing and the how issue, and to be a total childlike, inborn state, to forget about all that other conditioning, but then that's what he's saying to do, just have faith in it, which I'm okay with that. I'm all in favor of it. Okay, but then you look around, like maybe 105 years doesn't matter. Maybe it's 505 years and the society will get it. Who knows? You got to live long. That's why we talk about health. Okay, we're down to the last minute. Gabrielle, thank you for being on the show this week. I really appreciate your commentary, as usual.
You're welcome, and thanks for the opportunity, Grant.
You're quite welcome. And I want to thank the journeymen that come to the show each week and those that don't queue up and so I can see them on the list. You can press 1 to be in the queue, and I don't do Q&A any longer, so you don't have to be concerned that I would do that. All right, so have a great week, and it's a happy new year to everybody, even though it's a couple days late. This is Grant and Taylor Hughes for my show. Did I say Hughes or Hughes? I said Grant, See you next week. Bye for now. Time over.